That goes back to the Phoenicians. When you had war on the Mediterranean and the ships would lose cargo for one reason or another, it could be military, it could be just weather. They were responsible for replacing the losses of cargo that the merchants owned on the ships. And so there was a time when they had to figure out how to avoid being responsible for paying off these lawsuits. So they created this idea of having a legal fiction represent the boat. And we know it as incorporation. So you make a legal fiction and you ship through the name of the legal fiction. And if you get into trouble, it's going to cost you a lot of money. You just close the corporation and poof, it's gone. There's nobody to sue because it's not there anymore. We call it bankruptcy, but that's all it is, closing of the corporation. And then they could make a new corporation.
So where did they come up with the word person? Was person a new word back then? Or was it always? Because it just seems like an English word for me.
It isn't.
But did they make it up for purpose of legal and then it morphed into this big confusion?
Well, here's a story here that in early Rome, they had conflict of laws between what was the Republic of Rome and then the Imperial of Rome after Julius Caesar. And when in the early 500s, Justinian became the big high guy in Rome, he wanted to codify these so they wouldn't be in conflict. And in the process, he struck upon this idea of deceiving people by a dual meaning of words. Therefore, you could get somebody to accidentally contract and incriminate themselves when they didn't even know it. And the court had a choice of taking it the way the people thought it was or making their own definition. And it's been known as the great Justinian deception. That is still with us today. They do it right now. Right now.
They do it all the time with double meanings of words. And it's the whole legalese speak. And that is the number one thing that needs to go away, honestly, because that's fraud embedded into the system. But keep going.
Well, in our own history, Abraham Lincoln was a bar attorney out of the Illinois area. Bar means British. Even attorneys today out of law school do not agree with me and they don't know their own history. The British accredited registry is the bar and they're all over the world and they are enforcing the law of British law. They call it King's Law in law school, but in fact, it's Roman law. And it came through the Pope, through the kings into England and became known as Admiralty Law and Special Admiralty Law. Now, the backstory was that Eleanor of Aquitaine, when she was married to Louis VII, left the Second Crusade, had come across this idea of admiralty law, a version of sea law, and brought it back to her new husband, which when she remarried to Henry II. He was 10 years younger than her, but she planted it at that point, and it finally made its way into England as an admiralty system. The admiralty law only deals with that which is incorporated. Sea law is that which is incorporated. And if sea law and admiralty law, and now in America, our courts are all British admiralty law. Well, where did that happen? That's not what the founders created at all. They broke away from that, fought a war over that. And now here it is. We're living with it. It's Abraham Lincoln. When he came into power, he was not eligible to be president of the Republic. He was a bar attorney. And in our Constitution, bar attorneys are not allowed to hold a public office. Well, he made his own corporation in Delaware called the United States of America, Inc. And then he called Congress together and made them swear an allegiance to his new territorial corporation. And then he initiated a war by seceding from the Republic and created a conflict of mercenary nature against the South. Well, why would he ever go to all that trouble? And how did he get elected in the first place? He spent 10 times what everybody else did in the election, and he didn't have that kind of money. Somebody was behind him doing this whole thing, and we find that it was France and England that designed this civil war so that they could get more access to cotton to feed the industrial revolution of textile mills. So they put Lincoln in place. Lincoln was to start a war between the North and the South using slavery as the reason to justify it to the people and to England's people. And then after we were weak, and the British would come out of Canada, and the French would come out of Mexico, and they'd take their colonies back and put an end to this whole experiment with government by the people. Well, it didn't work because they had a West Coast that was already now California in 1850 was a state. Oregon had its constitution written in 1857 and was submitting it for approval. So they invited Russia to take the West Coast back and put an end to that. And Russia looked at the whole thing and said no. And they exposed the whole charade. They told everybody what was going on. They sent her whole fleet to our two coasts to patrol us, to protect us from France and England. Well, Alexander II got assassinated for that little bit, but he was interviewed one time. And they said, why was it that you came to the rescue of this new republic? And he said, well, it wasn't about the fact that I was so enamored with the republic. It was the fact that the Industrial Revolution was affecting England and France, but not Russia. We were an agrarian society still. And if France and England got their hands on that southern cotton and went racing ahead in the economic world, we would never catch up. And he said it wouldn't be good for my people. Simple as that. So he blew the whistle on it, and France and England both backed off. So then they tried another tactic. Gettysburg happened early in 1863, and Lincoln was quite shaken by it. And I think about that time, he began to realize he was being used. Big forces were using him, and he had done a lot of damage.
He didn't know that before then? You think he was acting?
I think he knew he was on something, but I don't think he knew the extent of the damage it was going to cause, because Gettysburg was horrible. They said he looked like he had the flu. He was physically sickened. And this was by French, the original historian of Congress, was right there by his side at the Gettysburg Address. And French said that he looked physically ill by it. In April of the same year, he bankrupted both of the federal corporation houses, which would be the municipal and the territorial, which left them open to being exploited by the very people they had contracts with, because these are contracts. Each one has its own constitution. There's the Constitution for the United States of America. That's territorial. There's the Constitution of, they're both of them, of the United States. That's the municipal. The parent is the Constitution for. Lincoln saw to it that wasn't being printed anymore. And right now, today, you can't find a copy anywhere. There's not in existence. And I tried for years to get one, and no one would admit to even having it. Finally, we found a source, and I have a picture of it. That one is unincorporated. He couldn't get rid of it by collapsing the corporation, because it wasn't a corporation. But he could collapse the two working parts of our government, Constitution of. England had the contract with the territorial. The Pope had the contract with the municipal. They both came in. The king or the queen of the victorious parliament came in 1868, took our Constitution of the United States of America and rewrote the title to make it a new document by changing the font, and that's all it takes in legalese, and then re-recorded us in Edinburgh, Scotland. So from 1868 until 1907, our country and our military was run out of Edinburgh, Scotland. All our treaties with the Indians were done with a Scottish corporation representing Britain. The municipal, 10 years later, did the same thing with the Pope. Well, why would they do that? The Pope owned the world as of 1302, when he did his Unum Sanctum papal bull, a decree. He owns all the souls of the people on the planet and all the land of the planet, and he wrote it as the known world. Well, it was a flat earth, and it was in Europe only, but it grew, and we had to have a contract to occupy his land. And then England, of course, had placed their flag on the western side of the United States, and all the way from the Louisiana line clear to the Pacific coast was British land. We had to have a contract to operate and live and occupy their land. So we have these treaties. The Northwest Treaty allowed us to move into that land. When my family came to Oregon, we were squatting on British land. And the British authority was out of what we call Vancouver Barracks, which is in Lower Washington on the Columbia River. But they didn't have enough people to hold it down. And we were populating the place so fast that by... It'd be 1848, we were accepted by the United States as a territory of the United States. And in 1849, within just a few months later, we immediately had our assembly. It was called Clackamas. Today it's called Oregon City. And my grandfather was there, and he became a councilman, which was later called a senator, out of the Yamhill district. Well, the reason that they did that was the way the republic works. You have an assembly at the county level, and you have a state assembly, and these are only populated by people, not persons. You have to be a living man or a living woman to participate. Well, a person got put in there during Lincoln's administration in order to control people, because in 1862, he decreed, and the Congress supported him, that a person is a legal fiction and a dead entity, has no soul, therefore can be bought and sold freely.
And so that was their way to get around the Pope?
Well, that was one of the ways. The Pope used it too. All of his laws had to do with overseeing that which is a legal fiction. He decreed that because he crowned the kings, and the kings then were subordinate to his ecclesiastic court that way, and he had his own system of law, that he could control commerce because the kings had commerce between them, and now he controlled the crowns of the kings. So therefore, he then made himself in charge of, we called it the global estate, a trustee of the global estate. He oversaw anything that was incorporated to make sure it operated lawfully. And he has an army of people right now today to do that. Vicar generals, they're all over the world, and we have one in every state. In Oregon, we have one on the East Burnside.
What are they called?
They're supposed to be looking at that, vicar generals. Okay. They're supposed to look at corporations, and if they do anything unlawful, they're supposed to be able to liquidate them with the stroke of a pen.
Have they?
They have, and they can, but they don't normally do it. There's more money in corruption than there is in lawful operation, and the Pope has not been doing his job, and the vicar generals as a whole have not been doing their job all over the world. So the world has become incorporated everywhere. They were given sovereign rights to everything. No more taxes, no more duties, no more toll roads, bridges, ferries. Everything was free to them, and they had a fleet of ships. Well, they became fractional bankers. The skull and crossbones was the Templar flag on the oceans of the Mediterranean. When they wanted to take the cargo off of another vessel, they ran up their flag, and the vessel better stop and let them have the cargo. If not, they ran a red flag up underneath it, which meant no quarter, and they killed everybody on the crew and sunk the boat. So, and that's your banking working with the political powers of this country. They run us into the ground, they bankrupt us, buy us as a fire sale, and go merrily down the road. And people don't realize that money's being siphoned out of this country in buckets, and they have no idea that's going on. They don't have any idea what their budget is. They've never seen the P&L of their state. It's out there. You got to know where to go to get it. The CAFR funds are available. You can find them, but they're hard to find. Well, what do we got for a government right now? Every department of the United States government, every single department, is a corporation with a Dun & Bradstreet number. They're not the real one. They're the legal fiction of one.
And same with us, right? Every single person.
They changed you into a person at birth. You're born of a free creation of your creator. You are therefore a people. Within a few days, the state issues you a certificate of birth overlaying your record of birth. That certificate means it certifies you as a legal fiction, and therefore you agree to it, and therefore it's the contract, so that you have not broken the law. You have agreed you are now a person. Well, you didn't know that. There's no disclosure. It's done without your permission behind your back. Well, that's fraud. But under Roman law, which is our law, fraud doesn't exist unless you call it fraud and claim that there's something wrong here and put it on the record. Then it becomes fraud.